Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rota. Our guest today is J. Kenji Lopez-Alt, the managing culinary director of SeriousEats.com and the author of the cookbook, The Food Lab, Better Home Cooking Through Science. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Before writing this book, you taught people how to cook better through science on the James Beard Award-nominated column, The Food Lab on Serious Eats. What was the first column you wrote on The Food Lab on Serious Eats, and when did you start thinking about using science to cook better?
The first column I wrote was about hard-boiled eggs, which has been sort of a perennially favorite topic. Eggs are always super popular because they're one of the first things people learn how to cook. And they also are one of these things that, you know, depending on how you treat them, you can get really vastly different end results. So they're always very interesting. You know, I the idea of using science to cook better just sort of came naturally to me because, you know, I have a very strong science background and was raised, you know, with sort of science in mind. And so when I started cooking professionally, it was just sort of natural. It was just a sort of natural curiosity and a natural desire to understand how things work. And that, you know, that naturally leads to using science to make things, you know, to cook better or cook more efficiently.
So much of what makes food quote unquote right is the texture. I'm thinking of the creaminess you expect from a perfect mac and cheese or the question of turkey moisture that we hear about every year at Thanksgiving. What are some of the tricks you've discovered for achieving texture through unexpected ingredients or techniques?
Well, it really varies a lot and it depends what you're going for. I guess one interesting thing, one interesting technique is to use alcohol in place of water in various sort of pastries and batters and things like that. So if you do it in a pie crust, for example, it allows you to hydrate dough very well without making it difficult to roll out, which is great because it limits gluten formation. So your pie crusts come out a lot more tender and crisp than they would if you were to use all water. Similarly, in things like a tempura batter or like a beer batter, if you cut out some of the regular liquid in there and replace it with a high-proof vodka, it bubbles more vigorously as it goes into the oil because vodka is more volatile than water. And so you end up with a lighter, sort of more bubbly coating that has a better surface area and better crunch.
So I'm going to make a confession, which is that I've always been sort of skeptical about the whole concept that there's a platonic ideal of these archetypal foods. When I was a kid, I would always insist that I preferred my marshmallows burnt because I didn't really have the patience to sit there by the campfire and slowly turn it until it was golden. And it got to the point where I really decided that there was something great about a burnt marshmallow. And I'm sure you've provoked this criticism a lot in people, this defensive, like, well, I like it my way, even if it's not as good or the right way. How do you respond to that? And do you think it's just sort of a different approach to cooking?
Well, you know, I don't think it's, you know, if you like the way you do something and you're happy with the end result, there's no reason you should change it. I don't necessarily try and change the way people do things. Really, my goal is to arm people with more information so that if they do want to change the way they're doing something, they know how they can do that and how they can achieve different results. I'm not going to tell you that you're wrong for liking something because I like a lot of things that, you know, other people might say are ridiculous or not good or whatever. You know, that's all just sort of, I think, you know, those kinds of value judgments aren't really that useful. You know, what I can say is that if you want to get a particular end result, understanding how you get there is the way you're going to reach it.
What are some of the strangest secret ingredients you've discovered while testing recipes and why do they work? I'm thinking specifically of the tomato sauce that you created with fish sauce in it, which is now, to be honest, the tomato sauce we make in my household. Right. Why does that work and why do some of those strange secret ingredients do something different in a dish that's unexpected?
Well, I mean, a lot of those ingredients are these sort of glutamic acid and inosinic acid rich things like fish sauce and Marmite and soy sauce and things like that, anchovies. And, you know, all of those are, they're high in glutamic acid, which is what we perceive as savory on our tongues. So, you know, in many dishes that you want to be more savory, where you want to boost that savoriness, you would add some of those ingredients in the same way that you can add, you know, pure sugar tastes sweet, sucrose tastes sweet, and salt tastes salty. Glutamic acid tastes savory. So you can adjust the savoriness of a dish without really changing many of the other flavors just by adding a little bit of those ingredients. Something like fish sauce and a tomato sauce, and you always want to use it in a small enough proportion that it's not going to taste sort of overwhelmingly fishy. You know, which is often why sometimes while I'll combine multiple different sources of glutamic acid, whether it's, you know, fish sauce combined with Marmite and soy sauce. That way you can boost the glutamic acid content without really overwhelming it with just one single flavor.
What are your favorite kitchen gadgets that you can't live without and that you always recommend that people buy?
Well, I think everyone should have a good thermometer, especially if you cook any kind of meat. It's the best way to guarantee that you don't over or undercook any of your meat. I use a mortar and pestle all the time. I find it much more convenient to use a mortar and pestle than to use a spice grinder because it's easier to clean. I don't have to plug it in. I just kind of pull it out and grind as much or as little as I need, and that's ready to go. A mortar and pestle is also great for pounding aromatics, for making things like curry pastes or if I'm making guacamole, things like that, or pesto. Anytime you have a sort of aromatic that you would want to chop up or puree in the food processor, you'll actually extract more flavor from it if you do it in the mortar and pestle. Mortar and pestles are also just kind of cheaper and easier to use in food processors, I think. A good scale is essential, especially if you bake or do any kind of charcuterie. Let's see what else. A bench scraper is one thing that I think a lot of people don't have that I find really useful. Just a sort of stiff metal blade with a rubber handle on it, and it lets you sort of clear off your cutting board or transfer things from your cutting board to a pot. I find it much easier, and it's way better than using sort of the edge of your knife, which is going to make your knife dull. What else is in there? An immersion blender. I would pick an immersion blender before a countertop blender. I use mine probably 10 times more often than I use my countertop blender.
In the new cookbook, you can tell that there's not only such a love for cooking and the science of figuring out why things work, but it's also just such an amazing cookbook. It's huge. It's full of all this information and these great graphics. What are some of the cookbooks that you loved and that inspired you as you were going through this process?
Honestly, the inspiration for this is not cookbooks. The main inspiration for this was a show called Mr. Wizard's World and a series of books that he put out. Don Herbert, he's not alive anymore, but it was a show that I grew up watching, and it was all, you know, it was about science, and it was science done in the mind of a non-scientist watching it. So it was very good at expressing concepts and helping you understand how things work. And that was sort of the goal here. I wanted to bring food science to home cooks in a way that wasn't intimidating, and in a way that would actually allow them to grasp the basic concepts and understand what was going on, because that's how you sort of end up applying it. As far as books, cookbooks that I like, I think the first book that I had that really kind of got me interested in technique and taught me a lot was Jacques Pepin's Complete Techniques. I also love Jeffrey Steingarten's writing. He doesn't write cookbooks per se, but he writes about food, and also one of my biggest influences. I really like Alton Brown's show as well, Good Eats. These influences, I think, all come from a pretty wide range of places, and they're not all just cookbooks.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for talking to us today.
All right, thank you.
Check out the book, The Food Lab, Better Home Cooking Through Science, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.